welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. This is probably the most focused debate regarding slavery out of all of them. And that's probably because North Carolina was, well, even though they were dispositioned for slavery, when we go through the North Carolina debates, you'll notice that the focus of the debates regarding the Constitution had far less to do about slavery than it was in South Carolina. And the problem, as we kind of already pointed out regarding Georgia, is that Georgia actually just rubber stamped, or at least we don't have the actual debates. We don't even have a fragment. It was really what Georgia sent forward was their, you know, their acceptance of the Constitution. And as a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, and believe me, I'm going to go actually look, yep, it was literally a rubber stamp. They didn't even provide, because they rubber stamped it in January 2nd, 1788, because they felt that this was the best deal that they could get. Just like it's been stated here in South Carolina. This is the best we can get. And if we wait for another convention, it's going to be worse. And it'll even get worse, and possibly they will want a prohibition. Then what are we going to do? Because, and I want you to understand something. They even pointed out the frailty of slavery regarding the importation and just this whole matter, because it created a huge vulnerability that any conquering force could come in, free the slaves, and then use those slaves to basically burn, pillage, and destroy, you know, all the property and those occupying the land. Now, had the North, you know, thought of this, and as a matter of fact, in the Civil War, that was something that was being done. They were offering the slaves, you know, an opportunity to participate in some respects in the resistance as well as fighting. You can't tell me. And there were many slaves, believe it or not, that actually supported the maintenance of slavery or supported the Confederacy. It was kind of, the Civil War was in so many ways just it hurts one's head to think of how people positioned themselves and justified their positions. But nevertheless, let me just continue on with what we are going to cover after these obligatories. As you know, the show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and this is really the only show. I mean, show me another show that actually reads the facts to you. I don't want you to take my word for it. And I know this takes a lot of time. But as I read through these debates and as I go through each of these, as you download these, all you've got to do, go get Nero Wave Editor, N-E-R-O, Nero Wave Editor. It's free. You can download it. And then you can open up my podcast or these recordings and just cut out. And as you notice, you'll find the breaks, and you can actually just remove the breaks and go straight from the outro to the intro and back in. So you get maybe 1 minute of a little pause with some music, me ending and then tying things back together again. But you then now have almost an audio book of the ratification debates. Where are you going to get this unless you sit down and you go to the Elliott Papers? And if you want the link, I'll give it to you so you can sit down and read them. This is why I'm giving you the treasures, and no one else wants you to have this, or they're not willing to do that, because I know when I go through the ratification debates, our numbers kind of take a little bit of a dip, because there are actually those that only care to hear about the marketing. Those are the news cycle. They're interested in, you know, my perspective on those types of things. And who cares about my perspective? Let's all start agreeing on the facts that the Constitution is limited and defined. I believe that the most important thing and the most important service I can provide you is giving you the light of truth and then letting you make the decisions as to what needs to be done. And there's no doubt in my mind, if you're a reasonable person and you consider the facts on their face value, you will agree with me that we must execute the design by Madison and Jefferson, what is referred to today as Republic Review, period. This is the only way we will save the Constitution. And though people look at this and go, well, this is not a grassroots movement. No, it's not. This will not change our culture. This will force the federal government into compliance. But as I tell people, when we initiate Republic Review, this will force what I call cancer education, because as people realize that the spigot is going to be shut down, that all of this, you know, school opportunities and all these boondoggles and money being thrown out for all of this unconstitutional government, all of it goes away, people are going to go, where's my cheese? And people will finally start realizing that we have to do this on ourselves. We have to become self-sufficient. We have to support ourselves. We are not entitled by the government to, you know, wipe our butts and to feed us and to put us into a home and shelter. We have to end this entitlement. We have to end the enabling of bad behavior and removing the consequences of sin or bad behavior. But anyway, as you know, that's why this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic solutions that we have to apply. Our comment line, call anytime, 24 hours, 425-270-5416. If you want to call right now, go ahead, 425-270-5416. Or collect your thoughts and create your, you know, your question or, you know, figure out how you want to articulate it. Call at your convenience, 425-270-5416. Anyway, so we were just getting into Mr. Barnwell's comments regarding slavery. And so I'm going to repeat this because, again, we have been segmented from one episode to another. Mr. Barnwell continued to say, I now come to the last point for consideration. I mean the clause relative to the Negroes, and I am here particularly pleased with the Constitution. It has not left this matter of so much importance to us open to immediate investigation. No, it has declared that the United States shall not at any rate consider the matter for 20 years. And yet gentlemen are displeased with it. Congress has guaranteed this right that for the space of time and its expiration may continue as long as they please. This question then arises, what will their interest lead to them? Do the eastern states, as the honorable gentleman says, will become the carriers of America? It will, therefore, certainly be in their interest to encourage exportation as great as an extent as possible. And if the quantum of our products will be diminished by the prohibition of Negroes, I appeal to the belief of every man whether he thinks those carriers will themselves dam up the sources from whence they profit, whence their profit is derived. To think so is such a contradictory to the general conduct of mankind that I am of the opinion that without we ourselves put a stop to them, the traffic for Negroes will continue forever. Mr. Barnwell concluded by declaring that this Constitution was, in his opinion, like the laws of Ceylon, not the best possible to be formed, but the best that our situation will admit of. He considered it as a panacea of America, whose healing powers will pervade the continent, and sincerely believed that its ratification is consumption devoutly to be wished. And so I think he kind of misses, but, you know, you got to remember, everybody's perspective is based on their biases. And so I think he kind of misses the fact that there's already been a debate in America by the leaders, because Hamilton and Jefferson and many moving at this point in time, even before and moving forward, starts talking about the progress or the direction of the nation. Hamilton and many in the North were actually projecting factories and manufacturing and production in an industrial economy. and those in the South. And Jefferson was one who preferred the agrarian economy. And he basically stated that he felt that, you know, that we an agrarian economy would be better. Hamilton argued differently. And if you think about it, an industrial economy would have been the result of getting rid of the slave trade. Not that farms would have gone away, but farms wouldn't have been such the, the vast resource for the world in feeding the world. When it also would have done is it would have created a better niche and profitability, because if you reduce the food that's being produced and you make sure that you're taking care of your own needs and the nation's needs, then the value of your food, the value of your product that's going overseas will actually bring you a better cost. So you make more money. Remember, you know, supply and demand. If you don't produce as much food, because as we saw, what ended up happening with the Industrial Revolution is farming did reduce because more people were gravitated towards working in the factory, and therefore factory working reduced the production of food, but it didn't eliminate it. There was always the need and the production of the food to take care of this nation. I don't think there were, other than some famine points, I don't think that this nation was ever not capable of feeding itself. It was always capable of feeding itself plus the world. Anyway, I digress. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Folks, I'm here to tell you that the good Lord, basically, if you look at the resources of this nation, the contiguous 48 states, the resources are so abundant that we actually, we were the breadbasket of the world. And not only were we able to produce with the fertile land that we produce and the mild climates that we have, that we also possess those very special rare earth minerals and almost everything that we need to exist. We have zero dependency on any other nation. The only reason we have dependencies for energy and rare earth minerals and those types of things is because the federal government has constrained us and subjugated us. And we are now also being dependent on other nations to feed us because of unconstitutional environmental and other regulatory practices and unconstitutional laws that we have been, and the federal government by design, because of the 2021 or Agenda 21, was designed to make us subjugated to the world commerce. And we're being reduced to a nation of services instead of production. And that is a very dangerous model. But anyway, let me move on. The Honorable Arthur Simpkins asked this question, and then Pinckney replied. He asked for information whether Congress had a right to interfere in religion. And General Charles Cotesworth Pinckney replied that they had no power at all. It was not enumerated within the Constitution any manner of religion, and explained this point to Mr. Simpkins' satisfaction. So the next real case that comes up is regarding basically the enumerated powers. Now, this is Friday, January 18th, so some time has passed, and they've been discussing this for this first session of the debates. Because, again, like I said, I believe they meet in something like June or towards the late spring, early summer. Anyway, Mr. Charles Cotesworth Pinckney stated, the general then, in answer to Mr. Loudon's objections that the powers vested in the general government were too extensive, enumerated all powers granted and remarked particularly on each showing the general good of the union. So again, they're emphasizing that this is not a general government. They do not have general powers, that all powers are enumerated and granted. And again, like he said, and remarked particularly on each, showing that the general good of the union required that all powers specified ought necessarily to be vested where the Constitution had placed them in the general government, and that as all the powers granted sprang from the people and were to be exercised by persons frequently chosen immediately or immediately by the people, and that as we had as great a share in the government in proportion to our importance as any other state, the assertion that our representation would merely virtually similar to what we possessed under the British government was altogether unfounded, that there was no danger of the powers granted being abused while the people remained uncorrupt, and that corruption was more effectually guarded against in the manner this government was constituted than in any other that had ever been formed. The only problem was that we started allowing people the access to, and started, so what had to happen was the jurists, politicians, lawyers, and so forth had to start getting people to believe that they could do these maniacal things that they started to do, creating corporations, throwing money out to loyalists who got them voted and so forth, that they could actually spend money, saying that the general welfare clause allows us to provide general welfare. And when we go through these ratification debates, we will find that that clause does no such thing. Anyway, so let's move forward into the uniformity of commerce. I have before spoken on the policy and justice of vesting the majority of Congress with the powers of making commercial regulations and their necessity there is in all well-constituted republics, that the majority should control the minority, and I should have had a strong objection if it had been contained the restrictive clause the honorable gentleman appears so anxious for, quote, that Congress should not have it in their power to prevent the ships of any nation from entering our ports. I cannot think it would have been prudent or fitting to have given the ships of all foreign nations a constitutional right to enter our ports whenever they pleased, and this, too, notwithstanding, we might be at war with them, or they may have passed laws denying us the privileges they grant to all other commercial nations, or circumstances now foreseen might render it necessary for us to prohibit them. Such a clause would have injured the eastern states, would have eventually been detrimental to ourselves, and would have in fact amounted to a declaration that we were resolved never to have a navy. Now, I want you to understand, when he was talking about the regulations and regulating commerce, did he say anything about production? Everything was focused in the regulation of the importation and exportation of goods. That was the extent of the regulation of commerce, and to ensure that each state treated each other equally, that no state could deny another state's commerce, nor could another state put taxes or anything else upon the flow of commerce. So the federal government, their extent of regulating commerce was to regulate the flow from foreign nations and the flow out to foreign nations, and to make sure that each of the states didn't try to exercise economic warfare. It was not to dictate how much water your toilet could flush, not to dictate the types of light bulbs you use to illuminate your home in the night, or anything in that degree. That the states had the responsibility of regulating the production of commerce for themselves, but did not have the ability to regulate other states in how they're to make their products, such as California telling Michigan how they have to make their cars to suit their state's requirements. If California wants to have specific requirements of manufacturing, then California would have had to create their own manufacturing plants to build them to meet those standards. And therefore, it didn't mean that they couldn't, but they would have been able to compete without having to do the shipping and everything else, and be able to provide a more competitive product to eliminate the vehicles coming from Michigan. Anyway, let's move on, because the Honorable Rollins, I think it's Lowndes here, yep, it's Lowndes, talks about the Navy. It was urged, until we have a Navy powerful enough to protect us, our liberties and property were held only on courtesy. But if gentlemen averted where this Navy so necessary was to come from, not from the southern states, but the northern ones, they would easily perceive to whom this country would belong. It was true. The old Confederation was a mere paper defense, but then it was good proof on our behalf, because the Confederation didn't have a Navy. They were dependent on the states for the militia, and it was a very weak defense, like he points out. But then it was good proof on our behalf if we were overcome by unmerited wrongs. Some had made this question, quote, will you join or will you be single? For his part, or close quote, for his part, he did not think matters had come to such a crisis. Rather, let us comply with our federal connection, which, not yet being broken, admits of being strengthened. A gentleman had instanced Vattel in supporting his argument, and laid down from that author an opinion that where parties engaged in the performance of an obligation, should any of them fly off from this agreement, the original was null and void. And so, it's kind of interesting how, one, they were pointing out the weaknesses in the Articles of Confederation, the necessity of a Navy, and they even throw in there that if somebody actually violates or actually abandons, then it really does destroy the Constitution itself. Anyway, General Charles Cotesworth Pinckney then goes on in this presentation on enumerated powers, and this is what he says. The general government has no powers but what are expressly granted to it. Pretty powerful. It therefore has no power to take away any liberty of the press, that invaluable blessing which deserves all encomiums. And what is an encomiums? As we see, if I can't even find a suggestion for encomiums. Anyway, I'll have to look that one up because it's new to me. The gentleman has justly bestowed upon it is secured by all state cautions, our constitutions, and to have mentioned in our general constitution would perhaps furnish an argument hereafter that the general government had a right to exercise powers not expressly delegated to it. Interesting, right? For the same reason we had no Bill of Rights inserted in our Constitution. For as we might perhaps have omitted the enumerations of some of our rights, it might hereafter be said we had delegated to the general government a power to take away such of our rights and have not enumerated, but the delegating of express powers, we certainly reserve to ourselves every power and right not mentioned in the Constitution. I'm going to look up this equiums and give you a definition of what that is when we come right back. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so because we were a little broken up by this unique word, the word encomium or encomiums basically means warm, glowing praise. And so let me kind of repeat what we were kind of rushed to say. Hereafter, that the general government had a right to exercise, or actually, I'll actually go before that, and to have it mentioned in our general constitution would perhaps furnish an argument hereafter that the general government had a right to exercise powers not expressly delegated to it. For the same reason, we had no Bill of Rights inserted into our constitution. For as we might perhaps have admitted the enumeration of some of our rights, it might hereafter be said we had delegated to the general government a power to take away such of our rights as we had not enumerated. But by delegating express powers, we certainly reserve to ourselves every power and right not mentioned in the Constitution. Bang! I mean, that's it right there. Every state makes a harmonious argument, and many states argued this repeatedly, over and over, that if it is not expressed and enumerated within the Constitution, the general government has no power over it. And so this is one of the reasons why I actually recognized that the Bill of Rights had really no weight until the 14th Amendment. Because for the most part, if they didn't have the delegated power, I mean, the Bill of Rights was just basically frosting. You know, it was just decoration. It really provided no teeth in protecting civil rights until the 14th Amendment. Another reason weighed, particularly with the members from this state, against the insertion of the Bill of Rights. Such bills generally begin with declaring that all men are by nature born free. Now we should make that declaration with very bad grace when a large part of our property consists of men who are actually born slaves. Do you see? This was one of the big points of why the South, you know, was very much for, you know, limiting, and why they actually took this kind of stand, because it favored them. As to the clause guaranteeing to each state a republican form of government being inserted near the end of the Constitution, the general observed that it was binding as if it had been inserted in the first article. The Constitution takes its effect from the ratification, and every part of it is to be ratified at the same time, not as one clause before the other, but he thought that there was a peculiar propriety in inserting it where it was, as it was necessary to form the government before the government could guarantee anything. And so they're just, if you notice some of the nuances of what they were arguing and how this was going on and moving forward, it was kind of interesting. Now, Mr. Pinckney, on May 14th, this is a Wednesday, if you're curious. Now, if you notice, the last time Mr. Pinckney spoke was January 18th. Now we're in May, May 14th. And Mr. Pinckney, Mr. Charles Pinckney, I guess he was no longer general, or they just stopped referring to him as that, said, "I do not agree with him so far as to suppose that commerce is generally cheating. I think there are some kinds of commerce not only fair and valuable, but such as ought to be encouraged by government. I agree with him this principle, that all the great objects of government should be subservient to the increase of agriculture and support of the landed interest, and that commerce should only be far attained to as to serve and improve and strengthen them. That the object of a republic is to render its citizens virtuous and happy, and that an unlimited foreign commerce can seldom fail to have a contrary tendency." Now he's going to talk about unicameral legislation. In Pennsylvania and Georgia, the whole powers of government, if you want to see the snapshot of how the governments were formed at the states, here you go. In Pennsylvania and Georgia, the whole powers of government are lodged in a legislative body of a single branch over which there is no control, nor are there executives or judicials from their connection and the necessary dependence on the legislature capable of strictly executing their respective offices. In all other states except Maryland, Massachusetts, and New York, they are only so far improved as to have a legislature with two branches which completely involve and swallow up all the powers of their government. In neither of these are the judicial or executive placed in that firm or independent situation which can alone secure the safety of the people or the just administration of laws. In Maryland, one branch of the legislature is a Senate chosen for 5 years by electors chosen by the people. The knowledge and firmness which this body have upon all occasions displayed, not only in the exercise of their legislative duties, but in withstanding and defeating such of the projects of the other house as appeared to them founded in local and personal motives, have long since convinced me that the Senate of Maryland is the best model of a Senate that has yet been offered to the Union, that it is capable of correcting many of the vices of the parts of their Constitution, and in a great measure atoning for those defects, which in common with the states I have mentioned, but are too evident in their execution, the want of stability and independence in the judicial and the executive departments. In Massachusetts, we find the principle of legislation more improved by the revisionary power which is given to the governor and the independent and the independence of their judges. In New York, the same improvement in legislation has taken place as in Massachusetts, but here from the executives being elected by the great body of the people, holding his office for 3 years and being re-eligible from the appointment to offices being taken from the legislature and placed in a select council. I think their constitution is upon the whole the best in the union. Its faults are of the want of permanent salaries for the judges and giving to their executive the nomination to offices, which in fact giving him the appointment. So, you know, as you can see, obviously he's pointing towards, you know, some of the things that have been instituted in this new constitution and how some of these states were already leaning down that path. Now, this next focus or comment under Charles Pinckney is, or Charles Coatsworth Pinckney, is regarding sovereignty. In every government, there necessarily exists a power which from there is no appeal, and which, for that reason, they may be formed absolute and uncontrollable. The person or assembly in whom this power resides is called the sovereign or supreme power of the state. Now, in South Carolina, they considered the power of the sovereignty of the union as in the people. One of the best political, and this regards the forms of government here, one of the best political and moral writers, Paley, a deacon of Carlisle, volume 1, 174 and 175, I have met with, enumerates three principal forms of government, which he says are to be regarded rather as the simple forms by some combination, intermix, of which all actual governments are composed, then as anywhere existing in a pure elementary state, these forms are one, despotism, or absolute monarchy, where the legislature is a single person. Second, aristocracy, where the legislature is a select assembly, the members of which either fill up by election the vacancies of their own body or succeeded by it by inheritance, property, tenure, like the commons. You got the commons and the House of Lords, or in respect to some personal right or qualification. And third, a republic where the people at large, either collectively or by representation, form the legislature. The separate advantages of a monarchy are unity of counsel, decision, secrecy, and dispatch, the military strength and energy resulting from these qualities of government, the exclusion of popular aristocratical contentions, the preventing by a known rule of secession, all competing for the supreme power, thereby repressing the dangers, hopes, and intrigues of aspiring citizens. The dangers of a monarchy are tyranny, express exactions, military dominations, unnecessary wars, ignorance in the governors of the interest and the accommodation of the people, and consequent deficiency of salutary regulations, want of constancy and uniformity in the rules of government, and proceeding from thence insecurity of persons and property. So he's giving you a really good picture of how they were judging these different governments. The separate advantage of an aristocracy is the wisdom that may be expected from experience and education. A permanent council naturally possesses experience, and the members will always be educated with a view to the situations or to their stations they are destined by birth to occupy. The mischiefs of aristocracy are dissensions in the ruling orders of the state, an oppression of the lower orders by the privilege of the higher, and by laws partial to the separate interest of the lawmakers. So we're going to wrap. He's got a couple of more comments, and then we're going to wrap up the South Carolina debates in talking about gold and money. and the importance of the control of currency by the general government. Now, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as he's going through and kind of describing and providing the strengths and weaknesses and so forth of these governments, I'm hoping, and you should go back and listen to this again or go read these words yourself and provide some deep thought, cogitate, ruminate, you know, really ponder on these words. And ask yourself, based on how he's just describing these types of governments, despotic monarchies or dictatorships, or whether they be aristocracies, or whether they be a republican representation of the people, you tell me what type of government America has become, and you can kind of tell where we are as a nation and whether we're still a republic or not. Anyway, he goes on and says, the advantages of a republic are liberty, exemption from needless restrictions, equal laws, public spirit, averseness to war, frugality, above all the opportunities afforded to men of every description of producing their abilities and counsels to public observation, and the exciting to the service of commonwealth the faculties of its best citizens. The evils of a republic are dissensions, turmoils, faction, the attempts of ambitious citizens to possess power, the confusion and clamor which are the inevitable consequences of propounding questions of state to the discussion of large popular assemblies, the delay and disclosure of the public councils, and too often the imbecility of laws. A mixed government is composed by the combination of two or more of the simple forms above described, and in whatever proportion each form enters into the constitution of government, in the same proportion may both advantages and evils which have been attributed to that form be expected. And so, kind of interesting, and I will say this, that Vattel was cited a lot in the South Carolina debates. Now, I believe it was Montesquieu that was referenced and cited in the Virginia Ratification Debates. But anyway, let's move on, because this is where Charles Pinckney starts talking about gold, money, and so forth. I apprehend these general reasonings will be found true with respect to paper money, that the experience has shown that in every state where it has been practiced since the Revolution. Now, remember what an indictment this is to the fact that we have paper money today. Has been practiced since the Revolution, it always carries the gold and silver out of the country and impoverishes it. That, while it remains, all the foreign merchants trading in America must suffer and lose by it. Therefore, it must be a discouragement to commerce that every medium of trade should have an intrinsic value, which paper money has not. Gold and silver are therefore the fittest for this medium, as they are an equivalent which paper can never be, that debtors in the assemblies will, whenever they can, make paper money with fraudulent views, that in those states where the credit of the paper money has been best supported, the bills have never kept to their nominal value in circulation, but have constantly depreciated to a certain degree. Now, even in gold, it has been proven that what kings or, you know, historically, what they have done in depreciating the value of gold and silver is they start watering it down with lead or other alloys, mixing in with it, therefore stealing out of the public purse money for the king and money for themselves while they watered down their gold and silver. If you looked at the American coins when we were actually doing this, while gold and silver was the back species of the dollar, those things maintained the purity of the day. However, as we started moving forward and moving away from the silver and gold-backed currency, notice what they started doing to the dimes and quarters by injecting copper and other alloys into the metal, thus basically watering down or inflating our currency. Anyway, moving on, he says, I consider it as a granted position that while the productions of a state are useful to other countries, it can find a ready sale at foreign markets. There can be no doubt of their always being able to command a sufficient sum in specie to answer as a medium for the purposes of carrying on this commerce, provide there is no paper money and other means of conducting it. Now, he concludes his comments regarding this, you know, down a little further, and he says, but above all, how much will this section tend to restore your credit and with foreigners, to rescue your national character from that contempt which must ever follow the most flagrant violations of public faith? In private honesty, no more shall paper money, no more shall tender laws drive their commerce from our shores and darken the American name in every country where it is known. No more shall our citizens conceal their coffers, those treasuries, which the weakness and dishonesty of our government have long hidden from the public eye. The firmness of just and even system shall bring them into circulation, and honor the virtue shall be again known and countenanced among us. No more shall the widow, the orphan, and the stranger become the miserable victims of unjust rulers. Your government shall now indeed be a government of laws, because the Constitution required the coining of gold and silver as the currency, and even allowed states to do the same. I am here to tell you that as we look at our currency and the direction of our monetary system, anybody that is aware with what's going on and how we got away from the gold standard, which is what Nixon did, and moved us further into a fiat currency, and then moved us into an electronic fiat currency. Now they're not even printing paper to match what they are throwing around the world. If you have no idea how inflated our currency is, the days come quickly after they keep on pumping money as they are doing now. It takes a year or two before the reckoning, or before the, you know, the chickens come home to roost regarding those inflationary numbers, because those numbers don't really hit us until it becomes hurtful. When I told you that they basically printed, what, $6-some trillion in addition to the other $6 trillion almost of regular spending in 1 year, $12 trillion, that is just, folks, it is going to be bad. We are heading into a financial reset. Now, some of the things you need to understand is go look at how much debt America holds in other countries. When we worry about the debt that we're taking, we are also buying debt and subsidizing these countries with our inflated currency. You'll probably find that we're pretty close. Last time I looked at this, and it was about, you know, 8 years ago, but you'll find that we're on par with about 50% of our debt, which is, what, almost $30 trillion. So we probably have $50 trillion in holding debt of other countries, which means if we really look at canceling out that debt we hold with other countries and that they hold of us, we really have half the debt that we're dealing with. But more importantly, the Constitution did not allow the general government to be able to go down this form of non-backed currency. They had to really amend the Constitution to do this. Nor did the Constitution allow the government to contract with a private entity the management of our currency and our economic system. They had to amend the Constitution to do that as well, just like they had to amend the Constitution to make the minute changes that they did to the Electoral College. The only way things can be done constitutionally is through the Article 5 amendment process. If they don't follow it, they are violating the Constitution. More importantly, as we've pointed out with this first actual debates on the Constitution for ratification, we have proven that the general government's powers are enumerated and defined. If they don't have the power to do the things that they are doing and spending money on it, the money that they are spending is fraudulent money. And they are putting themselves and what they believe is us at risk. All they're doing is putting themselves and the nations who believe the facade, the fraud, they're equally co-partners in fraud. China is an equal co-partner in fraud. Britain, Japan, Germany, these other nations that are buying our debt are those who are working in collusion with those pernicious people and those pernicious politicians. I love the double P. The pernicious politicians in our government, they are colluding with them, so that we can be defrauded and be stolen of, you know, have our liberties, our Constitution, and this nation stolen from us. We cannot allow these things to continue. The only process is Republic Review in auditing the Constitution and proving that all of these things have been done fraudulently. And if these countries want their pound of flesh, we shall send them these politicians that did this. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic Review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.